There have been lots and lots of fad diets over the years. Some come and go, some stick around. They're hard to miss. There are internet links, social media influencers, books, magazines, videos, and so on, making the case that this diet is the one that's going to help you lose weight, feel better, get happier. And if you look closely, you can find people who debunk those diets and work to expose the faulty scientific claims behind many of them. But in her new book, our next guest does something different. As an anthropologist, she looks at the appeal of fad diets and says, this means something about who we are, what we value, how we relate to our food and to each other. You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. Have you moved from one diet to another at some point in your life? Was there one that felt kind of extreme to you? It was hard to keep up with it. Was it difficult to stick with it, or did you? Our guest says Americans are more likely than people elsewhere in the world to embrace these fad diets. Why do you think that might be? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Janet Charzan is a nutritional anthropologist and adjunct assistant professor of nutrition at the University of Pennsylvania. She's co-author with Kima Cargill of the new book, Anxious Eaters, Why We Fall for Fad Diets. Janet, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, hi, Rob. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with a quick working definition. What do we mean by a fad diet?
Well, there's lots of definitions out there. There's a sort of big one that Pennington Biomedical Research Group has 7 points, which I'll tell you quickly. They usually ask the user to eliminate one or several food groups, promise quick results, use personal testimonies as proof of effectiveness, often use only special or certain foods that offer particular advantages. They usually recommend supplements. They're endorsed or advertised by a celebrity, and frankly, they sound too good to be true. And I think you can simplify this to say that they ask you generally to change your food rituals, and they make improbable claims about efficacy. So you're going to get a really great outcome, a magical thinking outcome. And almost always you're being asked to buy something.
Now, people argue about the nutritional value, the dietary value of these diets. You go a little deeper, and I'm going to quote from your book here. You write, a diet is not just a set of behaviors, but a belief system, a consumer product, and a social identity. What led you to want to take these diets and look into what they mean in our lives?
Well, I've been working with food for a long time, obviously. I teach students, but I do community work. I started a farmer's market, and I've done research with maternal and child health care. And the minute I tell someone what I do, they immediately tell me about what their latest diet is. And they have such a look of hope in their eyes. And if I have a face that shows any doubt whatsoever, they get a look of kind of fear. And often,
I think we've lost our guest. Janet Charzan is author of the new book, Anxious Eaters, Why We Fall for Fad Diets. We'll reconnect with her in just a moment, but you could join in at 800-642-1234 if you have experience with what she described as fad diets. If you know somebody, maybe, who's bounced from one to another, can you talk about the kind of things you've seen there and why these fit into our culture and why, and we're going to talk about this in just a moment, why it seems especially American to be into these kinds of fad diets. Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We also have a spot on the Ideas Network Facebook page for you to share your thoughts. We'll come back, hopefully, with a guest on the line. Oh, do we have her? Janet, okay, we've got you back. We don't. We'll come back, hopefully with guest in hand here on Central Time. Again, you can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. You're listening to the Ideas Network. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We're picking up the conversation with Janet Charzan, nutritional anthropologist, author of the book, Anxious Eaters, Why We Fall for Fad Diets. You can join in at 800-642-1234. If you have experience with these diets, your own or someone else, questions about what they mean to us, why they've become so popular and remain so popular over the years, 800-642-1234 is the number to call or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Janet, you write in the book that Americans seem to be particularly into fad diets as compared to the rest of the world. And you talk about some of why that is. Why is that?
Well, I think broadly speaking, you know, we have so many different cultures in our country. We don't have necessarily an established food culture because we are a bricolage of cultures and peoples. And so there's a lot of information coming in, right, about what we can eat and what others can eat. So that's part of it. I think part of it, too, is that we believe strongly that consumerism can solve problems. So if you're given the option of, hey, you can buy into this diet and, you know, you'll lose 5 pounds a week, that sounds pretty good to us. And we also tend to be really individualistic. And so it's easy to think, okay, well, I can choose this diet for myself and I can make a real change. I can transform myself. We also believe in self-transformation. So all of that kind of comes together to make it easier for us to believe that, yes, if we go for this particular diet that maybe our cousin told us about, that we too will have these phenomenal outcomes.
I think I get the sense reading your book, you are maybe skeptical about the nutritional and dietary value of many fad diets, but you write, they make cultural and psychological sense. You're not like beating up on people who try these diets. How do they make cultural and psychological sense in a way that makes them so appealing to us?
Yeah, they make absolute sense. They rely on narratives that are cultural narratives that become almost truisms that once we buy into that, once we start thinking, well, of course that makes sense, it's easy to just buy into the diet. So, for instance, I think many people in the United States have really come to believe that carbohydrates are kind of scary and hinky and sugar is bad. And that's not necessarily the case. We need carbohydrates. But so if a diet is presented as something that's going to decrease your sugar cravings and make you healthy, you're going to say, hey, that sounds good. I know that'll work because I believe this background narrative.
Let's bring on a caller at 800-642-1234. Jane is with us in Madison. Jane, hi.
Hi. I was wondering if the author has studied this, broken it down into what, say, gender category or what kinds of people are more susceptible, what categories of people might be more susceptible to diet fads. And I thought of one other question, too, while I was waiting. It sounds as though people buying into these diet fads, it isn't based on science. And is that kind of a indication of the science that is lacking in our population?
Jen, thanks for the call. Let's tackle that first question first, Janet. Do these things break down demographically, men, women, and other categories as you see it?
No, they don't. And that's one of the things that's fascinating is that across the board, this promise of self-transformation appeals to everyone. And so there's really no difference if you look at who's interested in these diets between, you know, regions of the country, ethnicities, races, ages, genders. It doesn't really matter. Now, some diets seem to appeal for whatever reason because of often they're transmitted by certain kinds of influencers, may appeal to one population or one group of people, maybe a little bit more than another, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't appeal to others. So, for instance, paleo is very popular among men who like to lift weights. But it's also popular among women who are interested in making sure their children are as healthy as possible. And so the narratives that you read online, the narratives that you learn about when you buy the books, et cetera, those narratives are designed to appeal to everyone so you can sell more books.
And Jane also asked, I think she was getting at scientific literacy. Are we willing to buy exaggerated claims or even false claims because we don't, I guess, get the science?
You know, again, I think I want to give us a pass on that one and pat us on the back. I think, yeah, we all know that we need to know more about science. I teach about science, so I'll say that. But I think that the claims made by these diets and the stories, the narratives are so compelling that it would be really hard for almost anyone, even a well-trained scientist, to step back and say, oh, well, maybe, you know, because the hope is so powerful, well, maybe that doesn't make sense. You really have to dive down into the books and into maybe the discussion threads to hear where it doesn't make sense. And sometimes it would only really make sense to somebody like me who's trained in nutrition. So I think they're very compelling, and I think they're compelling to a lot of people.
Thanks for that call, Jane, at 800-642-1234. Janet, as you write about this wide variety of fad diets, a lot of them are very stringent. They require giving up categories of food and following a plan, sometimes timing your meals in particular ways. It sounds hard, but in some ways, is that part of the appeal? Like, if I take this on, I feel like I'm really taking action here.
Man, you really did read the book, didn't you?
I did, yeah.
Absolutely. And in fact, well, I think of it in terms of sunk costs, an economic term, which is the more we invest in something, the more we have a hard time giving it up. And what happens if you've bought the books and maybe the special foods and you've really changed your food habits and maybe you can't go out to dinner with friends and you're really changing your day-to-day life, you've got so much invested at that point that it's really hard to start thinking, well, maybe this isn't working, or maybe this is not working very, very well, or maybe I'm really unhappy doing this. So we really invest so much that it's hard to walk away.
And one thing that struck me, there was a kind of a case study of a couple in the book who would alternately go for a couple few weeks on a really stringent diet. And then when they bailed out on it, it's, you know, pizza and tater tots and beer for supper every night and no middle ground. I imagine that's probably fairly common, that sort of back and forth.
Absolutely. And in fact, that's one of the reasons why these diets often fail, which is that it gets dichotomized. Like when you're on the diet, it's sort of an all or nothing. You're being virtuous, you're being in control, you're being good. And then when you have a little slip, oh, let me go have that ice cream, you know, or oh, okay, I'll go have that martini. Whatever that is that you're not supposed to have that's on that diet that's pure and that's good and that's clean and that's going to make you the person you really want to be. Once you kind of stop doing it, all of a sudden, oftentimes, people will just go crazy and have a Rabelaisian time of it and then say, oh, well, I just don't have it in myself to control myself in such a way to continue the diet, so whatever, I won't do it anymore. And then the next diet comes along, and, you know, maybe their cousin tells them about it, and they say, well, maybe this will be the new one that really works well.
And you mentioned the diet failing, and I imagine if you're in the zone, if you're in the mindset of these diets, did the diet fail me or did I fail the diet? How does that kind of accountability work for people?
Absolutely. You've nailed it. And I think what happens is people feel that they've failed the diet and that they're not worthy, maybe not even worthy of losing weight. I don't know. That if they just did the rituals right, you know, if they just avoided the right foods or took the right supplements or ate the foods in the right order at the right time, whatever the restrictions are, that they too would have success. Because when you read the books or hear the diet gurus or sometimes even read what other people on chats and the various websites are saying, many people say, wow, this was so successful for me. And so, you know, I don't know how often those people are paid to say that. It might be. But it's really hard to say, well, maybe there's something wrong with the diet. Again, you've got those sunk costs. You paid for a bunch of stuff, even if you just paid for time.
Talking to Janet Charzan, nutritional anthropologist, co-author of the book Anxious Eaters, Why We Fall for Fad Diets. You can join in if you have an experience to share, a question about the cultural and social role of fad diets. Call it at 800-642-1234. If you're on one of these diets, you feel kind of insulted that we're calling them a fad diet. Share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. Janet, you used a word a few moments ago, virtue. And that seems like such a big part of the story as you tell it. We, in American culture anyway, I don't know if elsewhere, we associate eating well and with restraint being virtuous. The way we appear, thinness may be seen as a sign of virtue. Can you talk about that connection a little bit?
Absolutely. We do, unfortunately. We have those set of connected beliefs. As we know, they're quite dangerous because they can lead people into disordered eating and eating disorders, right? But we do tend to, we say in anthropology, valorize, add value to or give value to certain kinds of practices that indicate that we're controlling ourselves, right? Oh, you know, I'm avoiding sugar and I'm eating clean, or I'm a vegetarian, although vegetarianism is not a fad diet. These are things that people say about themselves, and they're such strong identity statements, right? I am. Or people will say, I'm paleo, not I'm following a paleo diet. And so they're telling something. They're telling a social story about themselves. They're doing a performance. And we rarely do performances where we make ourselves look worse than we think we might be, right? When we do performances, we want to impress other people. So this becomes a way that you can impress other people, right?
But on the other hand, a big part of our food economy is based on us buying and consuming foods that we may be skeptical about. And even, you know, I've grown up seeing ads that show that having this sugary food or soda or beer or you name it is going to make me a fun person with great social connections to the other people I consume it with. No wonder we're messed up about food, right?
Oh, goodness, yes. The cognitive dissonance in all of this, and again, that goes back to why I see this kind of look, an almost crazed look, although the people are not crazy, on people's face, because the cognitive dissonance of trying to find a path through the amazing amount of food that's available to us, the amazing amount of food information that's daily available to us. You know, you can't open your browser, at least I can't, without being told what food I need to avoid permanently. Doctors say, and oof, you know, it's coming at us constantly, and it is confusing. And so if we adopt one of these diets and we think of it as a part of our practice, and especially if other people say, oh my gosh, you're so good, you're not eating bread, oh wow, then there's a lot of social reinforcement happening.
Another classic anthropology concept you look at in the book is the idea of purity. We're very concerned about what goes into our bodies and if it will pollute us in some way. How does that factor into fad diets?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Especially with some of these later, as the fad diets have kind of continued, what I see happening is that they start to converge. And so if you had, let's say, the Atkins diet in the 80s, where you're not supposed to be eating very much carbohydrates, that kind of gets added to don't eat gluten, don't eat this, don't eat that. And they start to converge onto this place where your body is really, you're protecting your body from this dangerous outside food. If you take a look at what is, there's no real definition of, for instance, clean eating. But if you take a look at what clean eating advocates say, it's really about a fear of the body being breached by dangerous chemicals, perhaps, or dangerous food items, things that are either going to hurt the body or, because of their intrinsic nature, cause damage.
Time for another caller. Sarah is with us in Libertyville, Illinois. Sarah, hi.
Hi. Oh, gosh, I can't get you off speaker. I'm sorry. Okay, you asked if I was insulted, and I'm like, I'm a little bit insulted but I mostly just feel like your guest just has some ideas that are just not right. And I've heard it from other people in my life, like, for years, and it's just they don't know what they're talking about. I don't eat sugar, and the reason I don't eat sugar is because I got super sick about 20 years ago, and I couldn't, and it took me years and years to get better, and the only way I could get better was to eat a completely whole food diet. And
I got you, Sarah. The connection isn't great, but point taken. I think sugar is an example, Janet. There are some things very common in our food system that many of us eat too much of. There are some legitimate concerns there.
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a food system that's out of whack in many ways. And to approach the caller's point, she has a point. We have our nutritional needs are broadly the same across the species, but we do have individualized nutritional reactions to foods. Some people find certain kinds of foods more difficult to eat, to digest, and they may make them ill. You know, a true celiac disease is a perfect example of that. It's an absolute real condition. It causes immense problems for people. What we see, however, with some of these diets is that they take something like celiac disease, which might affect about maybe 1%, less than 1% of the people, and they say, well, if it's bad for 1% of the people, it must be actually reasonably bad for 100% of people. If it's bad for some of us, it's probably bad for all of us. And that's where it's a problem. Because what happens is people start to restrict their diets. They start to adopt certain practices that then can indeed be disordered eating. And then they can have a very unhealthy relationship with food that's marked by really uncertainty, fear, and a sense of unworthiness, a sense that they're not doing the right thing. And, you know, one of the things that I have to do as a nutritionist is try to get people to enjoy their food. To really embrace and enjoy their food so that whatever changes they might want to make or maybe even need to make can be made within the context of the diet and the foods that they enjoy eating.
That's a good place to leave it, Janet. Thanks again for joining us today.
Okay, thank you for having me.
That's Janet Charzen, nutritional anthropologist and adjunct assistant professor of nutrition at the University of Pennsylvania. Her latest book is Anxious Eaters, Why We Fall for Fad Diets. You can still share your thoughts, your story over on the Ideas Network Facebook page.